Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
I was born in January 1944, when Hitler was still going strong and the Second World War, which killed about 100 million human beings, was still rampaging. Andrew Gregg was born in October 1943 in Jerusalem, which has long been a symbol of intractable conflict ever since. Not that Andrew was to blame. Andrew Gregg studied zoology at Cambridge and, as you'll hear, worked as a broadcaster as well. He's long been preoccupied by warfare and what makes nice people like us go in for it so readily. Now, it may be true that we have, in the 21st century, far fewer wars and casualties than was the average in that previous blood-drenched 20th century. But nonetheless, what with Kenya, Iraq, Congo, Afghanistan, and all the other stands, we see carnage in our media every day. And the big one may still be just around the corner. Andrew.
It's pretty obvious that I don't know when you'll be hearing this. Even if I were to broadcast this live, that would be highly unlikely, because I don't like getting up early on a Sunday morning, which is when Occam's Razor goes to air. There's more than a chance that you'll be listening to a recording, to the podcast. Or dare I say it, it could even be hundreds of years from now, as an archival recording of 21st century ABC radio. This, of course, would only be if we humans were still around, a point I shall come back to a little later. Just for the record, this is not a live broadcast. Let me also put on the record that there'll be no more puns for the next few minutes. Why am I saying all this? There are two connections to what I'm about to discuss. The first is to international conflict. Who knows what will have happened in the world between the time I'm speaking and the time you hear this? There are wars going on as I speak, and I'm afraid that if it's in the immediate future at least, there'll be wars going on as you listen. The second connection is to technology, which seems to be changing ever more quickly, even the technology of radio broadcasting. And the focus of this talk, that's a nice old-fashioned radio word, is on war and technology. I'm going to suggest that we might be able to find some solutions to the problems of war through technology. Let's start with technology, one example being the technology of radio, what we used to call the wireless. My voice, what you're hearing now, is being recorded digitally onto a computer drive. In the early days of broadcasting, radio recording was onto gramophone discs. This method was superseded with the invention of tape recorders, used by the ABC until quite recently. Almost exactly 40 years ago, I worked at the ABC. Perhaps, to be more accurate, I should say I was employed by the ABC, in Port Moresby in Papua New Guinea, which was still under Australian administration. We recorded our programmes onto tape, but we still used discs in other ways. Big broadcasters, like the BBC, used to sell their programmes round the world on what were called transcriptions, high-quality, long-playing gramophone records. Things were fairly quiet in Port Moresby on a Sunday afternoon, before it was time to take off for the pub, and I used to go and find a turntable in the studios and listen to goon shows and other comedy programmes on the discs that I'd borrow from the transcription library. We didn't have a huge staff at the radio station, and we helped each other out with a variety of productions. These included drama programmes for schools on wartime history. I remember that not only did I have a role as the famous Japanese Admiral Yamamoto, but I also took my turn playing in the Sounds of the Battle of the Coral Sea from 78 RPM sound effects discs. Hamming up Admiral Yamamoto and playing gunfire from a sound effects record was terrific fun. Real warfare isn't nearly such a laugh. I only came to understand this many years later in Central Africa. I saw just a little of what war can do, working among refugees from the Rwandan conflict in eastern Zaire. That's another tale. But I'll just say that I found the sight and indeed the smell of the bodies of those who had perished in a cholera epidemic as a result of the war profoundly depressing. More to the point, it seemed so unnecessary. We humans can be incredibly clever and competent. Look at your wristwatch with its digital time and date and alarm, or at your mobile phone. When I was in Papua New Guinea in the 1960s, these devices would have seemed total science fiction. We can now transplant hearts and navigate spacecraft through the rings of Saturn. But with war, which, let's face it, is basically an exercise in trying to resolve disputes, we still seem to be remarkably unskilled. We keep on trying to kill each other. For a long time we used blades. Now it's mostly bullets and bombs. Warfare today is really just a continuation of what's gone on since the earliest cave dwellers, and even before. It was only quite recently that we found out that chimpanzees make war. They roam around in gangs and attack chimps in other gangs. Chimps are our nearest relatives in the animal kingdom. If chimpanzees make war, it's pretty likely that the earliest humans made war. Our findings about the behaviour of apes came out of very careful observation by scientists like Jane Goodall. I suggest that the more we can use science to learn about conflict in other animals, the better chance we have of understanding conflict between humans. War is unpleasant, but warlike behaviour must have been advantageous to humans, otherwise it wouldn't have survived up to now. War used to be very nasty, although until the 20th century we could still live with it. But warfare has now lost any biological advantage it ever had, because a nuclear war could potentially extinguish our species. The Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962 brought us very close to nuclear conflict. Since then we've relaxed a little, but we're not as safe as we might think. For example, in November 1979, the USA thought it was under attack by the USSR. Missile bases were cleared to launch a retaliatory nuclear strike. Fortunately, it was discovered in time that a training tape simulating nuclear attack had been wrongly loaded into a computer at US Strategic Air Command. In January 1995, there was a similar scare on the Russian side this time, when a Black Brant rocket, launched for a scientific investigation over Norway, was confused with a Trident missile. Sooner or later, either from nuclear proliferation, or if we continue to tolerate the kinds of aggressive hoodlums who got us into the Iraq invasion, there will be nuclear conflict. A nuclear war might not wipe us all off the planet, but those who survived would, to put it mildly, not be looking forward to a very high quality of life. The only way to avoid nuclear warfare is to get rid of the bombs. But how do we do that? Political solutions, diplomacy and negotiation are making progress, but it's very slow. So-called civilized democracies, including one that is very, very close to where I'm speaking from, have in the last few years appeared to be moving the other way. I'm suggesting a different approach. It would not replace the efforts of peacemakers around the world, but it could support and complement all our other activities in working for world peace. That approach is through technology. It's the technology of war which has made it increasingly damaging, to the stage where a nuclear holocaust could exterminate us all. You can kill with your bare hands and teeth, like chimpanzees. Sticks and stones, also used by chimps, kill just a bit more easily. We humans, so clever with technology, developed these tools of warfare, these weapons, over many thousands of years. We invented stone axes, then copper ones, then bronze, then iron, and we made swords and spears and arrowheads. About 1,000 years ago, we invented gunpowder, which allowed us to invent bombs and guns. The technology of slaughter became increasingly efficient. We invented the machine gun and high explosive shells, so that at the 1915 Battle of the Somme, we were able to kill some 300,000 of our species. In March 1945, with the help of some 300 B-29 bombers, plus incendiary bombs, we were able to kill 80,000 citizens of Tokyo in a single night. A few months later, the stakes were changed forever. We had invented the atom bomb. With just one bomb dropped from one plane over Hiroshima in August 1945, we killed 140,000 people by the end of the year, either very quickly from the explosion or more slowly from radiation sickness. 60 years after Hiroshima, we have many thousands of nuclear weapons. We also have astoundingly sophisticated missiles and fighter planes, let alone all the destroyers and submarines and tanks. We are amazingly skilled at killing each other. My suggestion is that we turn our wonderful technological skills away from war to the service of peace. We still have to resist aggression, but maybe we can do that without the injury and death of present-day warfare. The concept of a technology of peace, like most ideas, is not totally new. In some senses, and it may sound strange, you could call body armour or even the walls of a fortress peace technologies, because they're defensive, they don't kill anyone. How else might we develop the technologies of peace? One idea, which began to get going in the 1980s, is that of so-called non-lethal weapons. These are weapons which constrain and subdue an enemy, but don't kill or cause serious injuries. Riot police use such devices, rubber bullets, tear gas, even water cannon. These obviously have their limitations, and a variety of more powerful non-lethal weapons, stun guns, nets, greasy chemicals, and even sticky foam have been developed. There's a long way to go. One problem is that the weapons are not always non-lethal. Rubber bullets and taser stun guns sometimes kill people. Civilian police forces can use them to oppress civil rights. Many of the inventions to date seem clumsy and even comical. Sticky foam, for example. But this is very new technology. At present, we spend about $1,000 billion a year on warfare. 1% of that is $10 billion. Just imagine what we could do if we invested those resources into developing technologies that would allow us to resolve disputes without killing people. Better defensive technologies and non-lethal weapons for UN peacekeepers. But also, for example, computer technologies that might better predict conflict and assist in dispute resolution. Once it was realised that lethal warfare is not inevitable, we might start to get rid of those nuclear weapons. And what would happen to all the soldiers? Well, crime and civil conflict are not going to disappear overnight, so there'll be plenty of policing needed to rein in the bullies and scoundrels. Justly and non-lethally, of course. And as for all those energetic, mostly younger people in our present armies, there's unlimited need to put peaceful technologies into practice, overcoming poverty and environmental damage, and halting global warming. I suggest that we can make an immediate start on non-lethal weaponry in our own backyard. For example, I seriously question whether our police, let alone our security guards, should be carrying handguns, technology more suited to the days of Ned Kelly than the early 21st century. Handguns are primitive and dangerous and project a culture of violence. All of us, not least our police officers, deserve better and safer protection. We humans are terrific at technology. Technologies can cause us great strife, pollution, for example, or soil erosion. But then we often develop new technologies to create even cleaner air or more fertile soil than we had before. War technology has caused us immense strife and suffering. Perhaps peace technology can do more than free us from war. It might help us to improve the quality of life of the citizens of the world in other ways. The technology of radio broadcasting has sometimes been used for war propaganda, in Nazi Germany, for example, and in many other wars since, if you like, as a war technology. I hope that in this Occam's Razor talk, we've been using it as a peace technology.
Radio, after all, is a rather peaceful medium, except when used as it was in Rwanda last century. Andrew Gregg's book is called Taming War, Culture and Technology for Peace. It's full of idealism, common sense and bright ideas. Next week, Richard Eckersley in Canberra asks whether those folk in times of yore really did lead lives which are nasty, brutish and short, or did they have as much fun and comfort as we ourselves? I'm Robin Williams.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.